Whitney Houston. Now, this is an interesting point of departure as our interview continues this evening in the Happy Hour show. Whitney Houston is African-American,
yes.
Was African-American, and you too yourself are African-American.
Yes.
And I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about your background, where you're from, and also how this links to your company, Discover Paris. Because you have interesting perspective on tours and tour guiding and presenting Paris in a certain light, a certain angle,
yes.
Which is directly related, I think, to your curiosity and your interest in your own personal history, and you've been able to bring it to Paris.
Yes.
I was wondering how those two stories kind of combine. It sounds very interesting. It's intrigued me.
I think it's interesting. So I'm originally from Houston, Texas. I am an African-American woman. I moved to Paris in 1992 to work for a drug company, and my husband, Tom, came with me. He moved here 3 months after I did, and we married in Paris. Thomas.
Oh, how romantic.
Yes, yes. And so we're a mixed marriage. Tom is an Anglo-American. And Tom was not able to find work in his field when we came. So after looking for a couple of years, you know, he decided he wanted to do some entrepreneurial things and hit upon the idea of Discover Paris. And this sort of sprang from a trip that we took together in Italy, where it was all self-guided. It was all self-guided. We told the person who was running the company, that, you know, what we wanted to do, where we wanted to go, what we wanted to do. And she sent us a personalized guidebook. It was written specifically for us.
Oh.
We didn't have to do a single thing that we didn't want to do. Okay. And we visited.
It's like a buffet. I'll have a bit of this, a little bit of this.
Absolutely. And I didn't know that Tom was incubating this idea for Paris. So we went to this woman's house. She was actually living in London. We went to her house. She invited us there. And over dinner, Tom announces, "Well, I think we're going to do a Discover Paris." And I'm like, "What?
That's news to me, honey."
Yeah, it was news to me. But the whole idea was to take, to prepare visits to Paris, just like we had taken to Italy, where the client tells you exactly what he or she wants to do, and they do nothing else. Okay. And so I thought this was a tremendous idea. We were both very passionate about Paris. Great. Then I come to realize that there is an African-American history in Paris, which I was not aware of when I moved to Paris. And I thought immediately, well, Tom, you know, African-Americans come to Paris all the time. We should have this as part of our business.
As a theme or something.
As a theme.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we created 4 self-guided walks in various areas of Paris that treated or featured different themes about the African-American experience there. And that's how it started. And then after the second Gulf War, business just suddenly changed. People were no longer interested in self-guided walks. They stopped filling out our online questionnaire. We would just get these brief emails. I want to do this. I'm going to be there that day. Can you help me? So we had to adjust. And what came out of that is that we started doing private guided tours. And from the 4 walks that I created initially, we have grown to 12 walks on different aspects of the African American experience in Paris. And for some of those walks, we're incorporating now more of the entire African diaspora in Paris and in France, because the ground that we cover, there are points of interest that are relevant to that right now. And so that's the short version of it. And it's really wonderful. Clients are just in enthralled, amazed, thrilled to have this view of what African Americans lived, what we're living now. But certainly in the post-World War II era, that was a big time. And then in between the wars, between World War I and World War II, that was a big time. And just to walk where these people walked and see where they lived and see where they worked and hear the stories, it's all about stories.
Mm.
And it's one of my best.
And you yourself guide people, or do you also you've worked, got other people working with you to guide the tours, or you yourself and Tom, are you guiding the people around through these walks?
I do 99% of them.
Okay.
Tom created a walk that has actually become very popular, a walk in the Luxembourg Garden, in and around the Luxembourg Garden, that he will guide sometimes and I will guide other times. But the vast majority of them, I do the guiding. And we also have a museum tour. We work with a French woman who has a Senegalese daughter-in-law. And she has biracial grandchildren, and they spend a lot of time with her. And when this element came into her family, she is an art historian, and she's a nationally certified guide at the Louvre, and she works at the Quai Branly, and she can go to all of these museums. She developed a walk for us.
Excellent.
On Black images in European art at the Louvre, which is also very, very popular.
There was a man named Beaufort Delaney. I'm not sure if he is
spelled
Beaufort.
Mm-hmm.
Beaufort Delaney, who is a kind of a local hero for you.
Yes.
Tell us who this man was.
So Beaufort Delaney was a painter. He was an African-American man from Knoxville, Tennessee. He found his way to Paris. He was born in 1901. He found his way to Paris in 1953, and he lived in Paris for the rest of his life, in Paris and environ. So he was in Paris, Montparnasse. Then he moved to Clamart for a few years. Then he moved back to the Montparnasse area. And he died here in 1979. Absolutely brilliant, brilliant painter. Did not come into his own in his lifetime. Always poor, always struggling financially. When he died in a mental hospital. He died without resources, and he was buried in an unmarked grave. Part of what I do for Discover Paris is write a blog, and we have a newsletter and all. And I was researching African American grave sites in and around Paris to inform my walks. And I found out that Beaufort was buried in a cemetery outside of Paris. It's part of the cemetery system of Paris, but it's just outside. It's in the town of Thiers, which is south.
South.
And you can get there by the tram. And I went to his grave, and it was just overrun with weeds. And it was the Thiers cemetery is huge, and there are many, many divisions, over 100. The particular division that Beaufort is in is one of several in that cemetery where the people are very poor. Were very poor. So the stones are broken and everything, but he had no stone at all. And long story short, the people who told me where the gravesite was sent me the money to pay for his concession. So what a lot of Americans don't know, and maybe other of your listeners either don't know, is that in France, your grave is not yours forever. You have to continue to pay for the space. It's called a concession. And Beaufort's concession had not been paid since he died, over 30 years. Okay. It was actually 30 years at that point when I found out about this. And he was scheduled to be exhumed. And they were going to take his bones and put them in a common grave. So his friends gathered the money. They asked me first to find out how much it would cost. They gathered the money. They sent it to me. I received a special dispensation to pay for his concession because he was an artist and because the French government owns some of his paintings. But it was made very clear to me, you are not his family. You have no rights. You cannot touch the body. We're just going to let you keep him. We're going to let you pay this money so he can stay in the ground a little bit longer. And when I was successful at doing that, his friends were so happy that they said, okay, we want to lay a stone. And I founded the nonprofit organization, Les Amis de Beaufort Delaney, to gather the money for that. And when we were successful, so it took us several months, but we were successful. We laid the stone there. We had a ceremony. After that, what I've been doing is really promoting. I don't really like that word, but making the world aware, more aware of Beaufort's life and his art. So that's the legacy of the association now.
So this is all going on amongst all your other activities that you've spoken about tonight,
yes.
The consulting, the tourism, this and writing.
Yes.
It's a very, very rich career that you have going
yes.
on here. And you have the time to come to the Happy Hour show in Ongown. This is wonderful. And walk around Ongown, discover the city.
Yes.
And it's writing is one of your many passions.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, you've just come out, well, actually with Tom, your husband, a mm-hmm. new book.
Yes.
Called Dining Out in Paris.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about this because it's just been published recently.
It's just been published. It's just a little over a month on Amazon.com. It's an ebook. And what it is again, this comes out of the work that we do in Discover Paris because so many people come here and are terrified of going into a French restaurant because
they might eat something that they don't know what they're eating. No.
Well, no.
Well, they think they're going to be snobbed by the waiters.
They think they're going to be snobbed. They don't understand the dining culture. They don't understand the food culture. You know, France is world renowned for its cuisine. And French people, unfortunately, in the United States, have a reputation for being somewhat snobbish or, you know, sort of above
it all.
A bit
elite. Yes. Yeah. Mm.
And when you're going out to eat, certainly, you know, you want to be comfortable. You want to enjoy your meal. You don't want to feel like, oh, my God, am I whole?
Which fork is the right one and what, yeah,
exactly.
What have I done? Yeah.
And a lot of people don't have a wine culture, you know, and wine is prevalent here and all of this sort of thing. So we created a guide to teach people what the difference is between a bistro and a brasserie and what the difference is between a boulangerie and a pâtisserie and, you know, where you can go in and do this and when you can expect to eat that and all of this just kind of very, very practical stuff. And we were giving that away for free for a while. But then we decided, you know, this is worth something. And we took that information and we also took restaurant reviews that we've been doing. We write restaurant reviews every week. We took restaurant reviews that we were publishing in a newsletter, a paid newsletter, where we also interviewed the chef or the owner, depending. Sometimes the chef and the owner are the same. And we selected 12 of those and we combined these things and put them in Dining Out in Paris. And it's a labor of love for us. Gourmet Paris is the other focus that Discover Paris has. So we're definitely African-American, but we're also gourmet. We do gourmet walking tours. We have gourmet activities. We held chocolate tastings for, God, 3 or 4 years. Before chocolate tastings, we did just sort of one-off tastings. We did a macaroon tasting. I think we did 2 macaroon tastings. We did a cheese, mont d'or.
You're making me hungry. You're making me hungry. Oh, I love these food. This is music to my ears, to my stomach.
And so, you know, we just have this love for food. I wrote a cookbook years ago that was not sponsored in the financial sense, but I was introduced to the French publisher by Alain Ducasse, for example. Yeah, so food and all that.
And the culture of food and the culture of eating.
Yes, yeah. Has always been a part of our business. And so this was just a natural extension. And so, yes, Dining Out in Paris is available on Amazon.com. And if you want to learn more about the book itself, you can visit ParisInsights.com, which is one of our websites, ParisInsights.com/ournewbook.php.
Okay. And if listeners would like to know a little bit more about your various tours and things, that's mm-hmm. on discoverparis.net.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So that will give people all they need to know about what sorts of tours and when and how. And
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Exactly.
And do you have Parisians coming on your tours?
We will do... Not normally, no.
Normally,
who we have are tourists. So they're coming from somewhere else, whether that be the U.S. or Canada. We've had people from Australia, the Netherlands, you know, wherever. But we do occasionally do special walks for Paris bloggers.
Ah.
Yeah, and they are also quite interested. It's you know, you can live in a place, it doesn't matter where you are in the world, you can live in a place and never see so much that's right under your nose just because you don't have the mindset or you just walk past it. You never paid any attention. And so we have had the occasion to open some people's eyes about things that they've walked by every day.
Exactly. And I think that's a really magical thing, is just to, is to reopen people's eyes, even mm-hmm. people who live here.
Yeah.
Because I'm now, my curiosity is piqued. I want to, you know, discover all these little secrets about Paris that are not even really secrets. Anyone can find them. It's
right.
just you have to make the effort to go and do that.
Right.
So, and tell me your language learning. I just want to ask a quick question, because I'm guessing you're doing these tours mostly in English.
Yes.
Or probably all of them in English.
Yes.
But what about you yourself? To get into the culture in France and to be here all this time, language learning would have been, without a doubt, a big aspect of your integration into France. How did that
yes.
go? And what sort of challenges have you faced over the years with the language and, you know, culturally as well with the language? Because mm-hmm. it's very, very much part of French life.
It is. It is. And I was really concerned when I first moved here about speaking perfect French. I have given that up. I've given that up a long time ago. Now, I do speak fluent French, but it's interesting because there are certain things, certain areas of life. For example, in my science business, the vocabulary just is not there in French. It's not common language, you know, so that I must do in English. I must do in English. But to learn French, I fell in love with the French language as a toddler, actually. I went to a private school when I was small, and I was exposed to French and Spanish very, very early. And for me, the French language was just like music, and I wanted to speak like my teacher. And I kept that in my mind forever and ever and ever. And I minored in French in college and took all kinds of, you know, French literature and French translation and interpretation and all of this kind of thing. And I even took a pronunciation course, and my professor said, "I just don't have anything to say. Your accent is perfect." That was then. I was not even 16 years old. I'm sorry. I went to college when I was 16. I was not yet 20 years old when I was told that. And fast forward to, I was living in the Bay Area and I was arranging my first trip to France, and I called to make a hotel reservation, and I could not understand the man on the phone, and I could not make myself understood. And he, you know, I kept having to ask him to repeat, and I was very hesitant as I was talking. And he said, he was telling me about the room, and he said the vase, and I said, "Well, what is a vase?" You know, because I was like, he said, "Les toilettes, madame." And I just practically crumbled on the phone. And I was at the Alliance Française, and I said, "What is a vase?" You know, it's, and my professor said, "It's a double vase, but we don't say double V, we say vase." And I was like, "Oh," you know, and it was just like, obviously I'm not going to make it here. I'm not going to be able to speak
as well as you want
French,
yeah,
unless I go someplace where I'm immersed in it.
Yes.
And so I had all the background.
You had all the baggage.
Yeah.
But you needed to put it into action.
Yeah. And so then I really actively started looking for a job here. And I got one.
And you got one.
Yeah.
And you haven't looked back since.
Haven't looked back since.
But do you still keep a bit of contact with the United States? I guess you still have maybe business contacts, networking, family.
Absolutely, all of that.
And you still do your speaking, do you do speaking
yes.
tours and things?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm in the U.S. At the height of my science consultancy, I was in the U.S. 3 to 4 times a year. Now it's once a year for sure, occasionally a second time.